Today, one man's quest to get from one end of the UK to the other in an electric car. But can he do it without blowing a fuse?
There are three machines here. I can't get any of them to work. Been on to the helpline, they've rebooted them. They still don't work.
We'll start with some easy questions to start, Sam.
Yeah, start you doing nothing too tough, please.
Ease you in. Okay.
Ease me in.
Thank you for doing this. Sam Wollaston, you're a writer for The Guardian, and this summer you drove from Land's End to John O'Groats in an electric car. Why?
it's a good question, really. I thought you said you were going to start with an easy one. I mean, in the short answer, someone in a features meeting said, thought it would be a good idea to send me. I love a road trip, you know. I was on my own. It wasn't exactly Thelma and Louise, but it takes in motorways, it takes in A roads and smaller roads. So it's not a bad way of sort of testing out the temperature of electric cars in the country.
Sam Wollaston may not be Thelma or Louise, but he does know a thing or two about cars and has tested a few in his time. But this summer, he took on a new challenge. With the UK phasing out all diesel and petrol cars in less than a decade, Sam and his editors wants to put an electric vehicle and the country's charging network to the test. Could he make it from one end of the country to the other? From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, is the UK ready for the electric car revolution? Sam's road trip begins on a breezy day at England's most westerly point in Cornwall. His car is a brand new Skoda Enyaq, an electric SUV which claims to have a range of 256 miles.
Land's End's a bit of a dump. It's like a huge car park. It's not how you kind of imagine the edge of the world should be at all.
Not how you imagine the grand start to your trip, Sam.
No, it's not, actually. And, I was hoping for something a bit more sort of, you know, romantic, possibly. But, and then a seagull immediately discharged onto my nice green. Yeah, it was a kind of metallic green, minty green, my car. But then it had a big white splat on it immediately.
Very lucky, though, that.
Well, it proved. Driving an electric car, it's a bit weird. You don't sort of turn the key and it kind of the engine comes to life. It's sort of unclear. It's a sort of silent experience, so you don't really know if you're ready to go, and there are a few lights, and then you just sort of touch your foot on the accelerator and you move off. And so we were off. I was heading for John O'Groats. Silently and slightly nervously.
Electric cars might feel like a very 21st century innovation, but they've been hailed as the future of transport for longer than you might think.
So the transport conundrum of the 1890s is sort of quite familiar sounding. People were realising that the transport system that was being used in London and in other big, fast-growing cities like New York was unsustainable, and something had to change.
Tom Standage is the deputy editor of The Economist and has just written a book called A Brief History of Motion.
The number of horses per person was going up very quickly, and if you were in the streets of London or New York in the 1890s, it was pretty grim. There was horse manure all over the place. It was even worse when it rained. In London, there's a lovely description of it.
Is it lovely?
Well, it's maybe not. There's this sort of pea soup, particularly when it rains, that's running up against the sides of the streets by the curbs. And there's this eyewitness account from London in the 1890s that describes this mud, which was, of course, the Victorian euphemism used for this, that often flooded the Strand. And as vehicles went past, they would fling sheets of this up into the air, and that would go all over the people, across the pavements. And apparently the shops and the houses on the Strand had sort of, you know, the first 15 feet up from the ground were basically splattered with this, well, mud, as they called it. But we know what it was, really. So it was really grim. And if you've ever been splashed by a passing bus in a London street, well, imagine how much worse it would have been in 1890.
That is absolutely disgusting. What were the different solutions being considered at the time to this problem?
There was one group in particular that thought it had the answer, and that was advocates of horseless carriages. And of course, that's what we now call cars. And advocates of horseless carriages really thought that they would fix everything. You wouldn't have the horse manure. That was the first and most obvious thing. They thought you'd have less traffic and less congestion, because when you've taken away the horse, each vehicle is basically half the size. So you could fit more of them on the street. And also cars could go faster, so they would sort of use the road more efficiently. So the idea was that this would also fix traffic jams, which were another massive problem by this point. And then there were finally going to be fewer accidents.
So they wanted to get rid of the horse. What do they think could replace it?
There's lots of alternatives at this point in the 1890s. There's three in particular. You can have a steam carriage, which, as its name suggests, has a steam engine. You could have an electric car, and obviously that's got a big battery in it. And you could also have the newest entrant to the field was the internal combustion engine, the gasoline or petrol powered car. And, you know, essentially there was a very active debate in the 1890s about which of these technologies was superior. Steam had been around for the longest. Electric cars were very, very quiet. They were easy to use. You didn't have to be very strong to use them or to start them up. They didn't make a big mess and sort of have lots of oil and greasy parts, because they were really quite simple technologically. And then you've got the internal combustion engine car, and that's less reliable technically at that point. It's a very new technology, but it does have the advantage that it's got better range than an electric car. So there really was a very even competition between them. And in fact, in the late 1890s in the US, the sales of each of those sorts of vehicles were roughly equal. In some years, the electric cars or the steam-powered cars were actually doing best.
I think that this is fascinating, that there was a point over 100 years ago when electric vehicles were the most popular car on the market. Why did that change?
Essentially, electric cars lost out right at the beginning of the 20th century because they didn't have the range of petrol cars. That was the main thing that counted against them. The battery technology was rubbish, so they could maybe go, you know, some of them might have battery packs that could allow them to go 80 miles or so, which isn't too bad. But you couldn't sort of refuel them as easily as you could with a petrol powered car, where you could buy petrol. Actually, you'd buy it at pharmacies and sort of general supply stores at that point. It's an interesting parallel with today, because the fact is that a very large fraction of car journeys today are just a few miles, and you could do them using an electric car with a very short range. But people like the idea that a car grants them freedom. So there's a historian called Gis Mom, and he talks about how cars are seen primarily as adventure machines, and a petrol-powered car gives you this sort of sense of being able to go anywhere. And if you look at car advertising, it's always, you know, people driving on open roads across, you know, countryside. There's never any traffic. And that's really how cars have always been seen. And electric cars, it's very, very hard to have that sense of freedom and adventure, because you're always worrying about where you're going to charge it next time.
So I was driving through the West Country along the A30, I sort of knew that, because we go on holiday in Cornwall quite a lot, so we always listen to Pirate FM. It's just a sort of tradition. So I immediately tuned into Pirate FM.
The secret sound on Pirate FM.
£1,700 to be won on this today. Is somebody about to tell us the long-awaited answer of Pirate FM's secret sound?
Uh,
Feeling pretty confident this afternoon. We've got Tom from Plinth on the line. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Holly.
And you're actually waiting for me to play this before you tip a load of stuff out of a trailer. Is that right? You're a lorry driver? Oh, I can hear it. Okay, well, we'll get on with this then. And you are full of confidence, it has to be said. So don't let me down. Tom, for £1,700, can you tell us what you think it is?
I think it's an embroidery machine. Embroidering Pirate FM onto a shirt.
Sorry, Tom. It was a lovely theory.
Yeah.
Not never right, mind. I'm afraid. So you go and tip your trailer load and have a good rest of shift, okay?
I just close my eyes. I close my eyes.
As well as a journey through the country, it was a journey through the country's local radio stations as well. It gave me a sense of kind of actually moving through a country a little bit, which was nice. It made it more of a road trip for me.
From Devon's capital city, this is Radio X.
So I went up the A30 through Devon and Somerset and got to Gloucester, where I was listening to Radio Gloucester.
A remarkable man who helped change farming history being remembered in the Cotswolds today. Richard Lutwyche, was fanatical about pigs. Worked to popularise the old spots, which saw the breed go from near extinction to become one of the most loved and easily recognised pig variety in Britain. And that life will be celebrated today.
Oh, they're lovely creatures. They're very, very intelligent, very friendly. They're almost human in lots and lots of ways, and yet we insult them so much. We call them greedy and fat and lazy and stupid and ugly, and it's just not fair, really.
And there are many people like Richard who...
So you'd made pretty good progress by this point, Sam. But what was the car like to drive?
So it's really nice. I mean, it's a very comfortable. I mean, electric cars are really nice to drive anyway. They're kind of smooth and easy, and they're quite quick actually. I mean, you put your foot down and you're suddenly really going. Having said that, I mean, actually you tend not to drive them quick, and this all comes back to the kind of the range thing. You become so obsessed with, you know, how far you're going to get, you tend to drive them in a very kind of careful and measured way. So I mean, I find myself sort of driving along at sort of 65 miles an hour on the motorway, so you kind of try and extend the range by as much as you can. So I think it makes you a better driver.
The current energy consumption is too high to reach the next charging stop safely. An additional charging stop may be added to your route. The charging stops on your route have been updated.
Tom, through the 20th century, did the electric car make any sort of re-emergence?
Well, there were various attempts to get electric cars going again. The most striking one for me is that Henry Ford and Thomas Edison got together and tried to do it.
There's one car that takes you anywhere you want to go. The Model T. Strong, sturdy, with a will of its own.
Henry Ford has just invented the Model T. It's this incredible growth. It's literally the same rate of growth you get with computer chips, Moore's Law, so doubling every 2 years.
Here's how they put them together at the Highland Park plant.
The number of cars on American roads goes from 8,000 to 8 million in 20 years in the first two decades of the 20th century, driven by the Model T. So it really is amazing.
A car comes off the end of the line every 10 seconds.
And then Edison, of course, is the greatest inventor of the age. So you'd have thought if anyone could make an electric car that would work, it would be those two. But they couldn't. The big problem, once again, was the batteries. Just finding a battery that could store a reasonable amount of energy without being too big and too heavy. They tried various different, you know, technologies and chemistries, and they just couldn't make it work. And eventually they just gave up on the whole thing. And so that only changes actually much later in the 1990s, when new battery technology is invented for a completely different purpose and then ends up being used in cars.
And that technology was lithium-ion batteries.
Life's an adventure. Unpredictable. Amazing. And often life's most memorable moments are the ones that don't happen on cue.
Which began to be widely used in camcorders in the 1990s.
Worry-free means more stamina battery power. So you never have to worry about running out. Or getting a message you don't want to see right in the middle of the action.
How do they get from camcorders to cars?
In the early 2000s, a couple of car enthusiasts decide that this is an interesting technology. So in 2003, these two guys in America built this electric car called the T-Zero using lead acid batteries. And they're like, well, why don't we try putting lithium ion batteries in it instead? But of course, you can only get these camcorder batteries. So they bought 7,000 of them and they put them in this electric car. Right. And it can suddenly go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds and has a range of 250 miles. Now we're talking.
Just come and see Frank from Carpet Ways.
I just love selling carpet.
Let's go, let's go.
Get the latest travel news for Cumbria at cfmradio.co.uk.
Sam, on your grand electric road trip, did you meet other EV owners? I mean, is there some sort of electric vehicle community out there?
Yeah, I quickly discovered that there is.
Sorry, you waiting to charge up?
No, I was seeing if it's worth it. I don't think it will.
They come past to me because you go to these places to charge up, and you're there for probably about 40 minutes. So, you know, even if you do go to the loo in the service station or get a coffee or something, there might be a bit of kind of standing around. So, you know, there's a good opportunity to hang out with other EV drivers.
Isabel's at uni at Leicester.
Oh, hey.
York to Leicester.
Yeah.
About 115 miles. So in the winter, 115 there and 115 back. Don't know whether the car would do it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, conversation inevitably turns to range. you just talk about range.
Obsessed with range.
What have you got? It's Niro.
Niro.
Yeah, Kia.
Kia. And how what's the range on that?
270.
270.
Yeah.
So did you do it in two? No, you didn't.
Right. Did you do it in one stop?
One stop, didn't you?
Yeah.
Obsessed with range. There's a bit of showing off, you know, my car. I got 270 miles out of mine the other day. You know, it's a bit of that.
Did people seem happy with their electric cars?
I mean, generally, yes. On the whole, most people love their electric cars, and probably none more so than Anne-Marie, who was from Newcastle.
So I'm in Carlisle and I'm talking to... Who am I talking to?
Anne-Marie Shield.
Anne-Marie Shield.
Shield.
Shield. Anne-Marie Shield. And Anne-Marie has just come from...
Newcastle.
Just tell us about...
She drove a Nissan Leaf. She was going swimming in the Lake District with a mate, and she'd driven over, and so she needed to top up in Carlisle before she did the next bit. She had nothing but good things to say about electric. She loved her Leaf.
I love it. I bought it when my son was about 3 months old, and I was going all around to all like the different baby clubs and everything, and I had an Audi Allroad, and I went from spending £174 a month on all the mileage that I did, because I did quite a lot of mileage, to spending £25 doing the same mileage in this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like one of Anne-Marie's main motivations is the amount of money her Leaf saves her. But are electric cars cheap, Sam? I mean, in the case of the one you were driving, how does it work out?
They're not cheap to buy, and that's one of the big barriers for most people. So the ENIAC I was driving, it was actually £34,495. And that includes a grant of £2,500 from the government. So, and the government, the grant has been slowly coming down. But even a really small, like a Renault Zoe, which is probably one of the smallest, that costs £27,500. And I mean, compared to, you can get a petrol or a diesel car for about £12,000 or £13,000. So there's a
big
massive
difference.
There's a massive difference there. But I mean, they are definitely cheaper to run. If you charge at home, if you charge your car at home, you can get for £50, you can get about 2,380 miles from a Nissan Leaf. And that compares to about 450 miles for a Volkswagen Golf. Depends a little bit about on how far you drive, but they say that, you know, they should, as it were, pay for themselves in about 4 or 5 years.
The breakthrough moment for the viability of electric cars was the invention of lithium-ion batteries. But for Tom, they only became desirable because of a company called Tesla, which was founded in 2003.
Electric cars were kind of embarrassing and rubbish, and, you know, they didn't go very fast, and, you know, they looked weird. And the genius of Tesla, the clever, you know, approach they were taking was, if we can build these sports cars and we can sell them, they're really quite expensive. I mean, the Tesla Roadster is, what, $150,000 car. But if we can sell a few of those, then people will start to think electric cars are cool.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to welcome you to our Los Angeles design and engineering studio. This is one of the buildings at Tesla where incredible things happen every day. Innovative, creative things. And we're going to share one with you tonight that we're actually very, very excited about. And we think you will be too.
And then we can use the money we've made from selling those really quite expensive cars to rich people to make a slightly less expensive car and sell that to slightly less rich people and gradually drive down, you know, making more and more affordable cars. It really has changed the perception of electric cars, and the rest of the industry is now scrambling to try to catch up. There's a general acceptance now that electric cars is the future of motoring. A lot of countries, a lot of cities have said when they're going to actually prohibit the sale of new petrol and diesel engine cars. And of course, the reason they're doing that is because of climate change, and we want to meet our climate, you know, emissions cutting targets. And one of the things you definitely have to do there is move cars away from petrol and diesel.
So electric cars have become much more popular, but how much better are they for the environment than petrol or diesel vehicles?
Electric cars are better for the environment. Even if you're powering them using a fossil fuel powered grid, so, you know, natural gas and even some coal power stations, you still come out ahead with electric cars. And that's just because power stations burn fuel much more efficiently than internal combustion engines do. When you do something on a big scale, it tends to be more efficient. So if you can green your grid so that you're charging electric cars using electric power that has not got any carbon emissions associated with it, then that's even better. But I think we shouldn't sort of assume that cars are the biggest part of the climate crisis. They're not. Road vehicles are about 17% of the total emissions, and cars are about 2/3 of that. So you've solved about 10% of the emissions problem if you move the entire fleet over to electric vehicles and you green your grid. So that's not to be sniffed at, and it has to be done, but you've still got a lot more difficult problems to solve, like how you make concrete without emissions and how you make steel and how you, you know, reduce emissions from agriculture and deforestation and so forth. So it's part of the answer, but it's not the whole answer. And then the other thing I think we need to bear in mind is that there are other, you know, externalities, as the economists say, associated with electric cars. So there's the question of where all the lithium comes from. Where the cobalt comes from is a particular problem. A lot of it comes from the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and a lot of it is, you know, is essentially extracted in very, very unpleasant conditions, often by children. Fortunately, we're starting to see the emergence of battery technologies that don't require cobalt.
Coming up, Sam runs into trouble at a charging station, but can he and the Enyaq make it to John O'Groats?
Nessie isn't the only legend living in Scotland. Time to make an appearance. Find the one on scotsgodating.com.
This is West Sound.
Across Dumfries and Galloway. The good times.
The good times.
Sound like this.
Sam, it sounds like your journey was going pretty smoothly. Did that continue as you went further north?
It did go pretty smoothly. All the way to, well, the border was with Scotland, really. I mean, Gretna Green is a place I'd heard about and knew that it was a place that people eloped to and got married. I didn't know anything about it, but my app, which is called Zap Maps, told me there was a charging place there, so I thought I would charge up at Gretna. And it's a funny place. There's a big statue of a couple getting married. And actually, when I was there was a real couple getting married, complete with bagpipes and everything. It was lovely. So I watched some people getting married. But my issue was charging, and actually that didn't go so well for me. I'm at Gretna Green. I've eloped electronically. Not electronically, I've eloped electrically to Gretna Green. And I've plugged into a BP pulse thing. I did it once and it said, you've connected the wrong connector. I hope it didn't charge me for that one, because it might have taken £15 off my card. And I'm wondering if I've done it wrong, but there's no one around here.
I
didn't manage to charge there at all. That machine didn't work. I got into a helpline
I mean, I can hear the exasperation in your voice, Sam. What was?
There was a bunch of Hell's Angels there, and they asked me what was going on, and you know they had no problems because they were, you know, they were full of petrol.
Just been joined by a bunch of Hell's Angels here. Maybe they'll be able to help. So I don't think they're EV fans. I think they're more into their fossil fuels by the looks of things.
So you were sort of forlorn. Like, why did the machine not work? Or why did the charging point not work?
It just didn't let me charge. And actually, this was not limited to Scotland. I did have problems, you know, at several machines not being able to charge simply because the machine wasn't working, or I didn't have the correct app, or I couldn't pay with my card, or the infrastructure. I mean, what I found generally was that there are plenty of chargers, but not all of them work. And this is something I found talking to everyone. It's there, but it's frustrating. And part of the problem is that it's not all kind of on one-to-one umbrella organization. There are lots of different companies, some of which you require special apps for, some of which you can pay with a card, some of which you can't. It's tricky, it's difficult. It's not quite the smooth experience you want it to be.
And when you can't charge, do you then just have to go and find another charging point?
Yeah, well, that's what I found out from other people with EVs, electric cars, is that they all have plan Bs.
This is an Ionity.
So actually, in this case, I found one just up the road. I met a couple there who were from Sheffield, Sarah and Phil.
We're going to Hamilton.
They were on their way to the races at Hamilton. They had a Jaguar. They couldn't get it to work at this charging place. And Sarah in particular, she was furious about not just this one, but the electric car experience as a whole.
Have you had yours for long?
We got it last summer. And I absolutely hate it.
Do you?
Because of the problems with charging.
Yeah. So you've experienced problems quite a lot, have you?
Yes. I couldn't charge it at home because they hadn't done the updates from the factory settings.
Yeah.
Then trying to find a super fast charger when you're out and about is not always possible because a lot of them don't work.
Yeah.
She said it just wasn't, for them, it wasn't reliable enough for them to get about. And they were going to miss their first race at Hamilton because of the problems.
You were obviously charging out and about, Sam. Would this presumably be a lot easier if you were mainly charging at home?
Yes, it would be. And it'd be easier. It would be cheaper. I mean, most of the charging people with electric cars do is at home or at their work. There's a big kind of but to this one. 30% of car owners don't have off-street parking, so it's very hard for them to charge at home. And I think a lot more needs to be done about that from the government, from local authorities. I mean, it's beginning to happen. You see these lamp posts in some areas of London that you can charge from conversions, and I think some companies are putting kind of charging under the pavement, but it's a major drawback for those people who live in terraces or flats. It makes it very hard to have an electric car.
Tom, we've heard from Sam about the hiccups he experienced charging his electric vehicle on his road trip. The government wants to phase out the sale of all new petrol and diesel cars by 2030. Do you think their message is clear on this?
Yeah, I do think the government has a clear message because this country is one of the countries that has said we're going to phase out new fossil fuel cars. I think that's good. I think we were pretty early to that, as I recall. So I think we're sending a very clear message that these fossil fuel cars are going to go away. I should also say that the replacements aren't just electric vehicles. In future, I think fewer people will probably want to own cars. The trend is very clear. Owning a car is becoming more onerous, more expensive, more inconvenient. And not owning a car is getting easier. There are more alternatives. They're easier to use, whether it's ride hailing, whether it's scooters, whether it's car clubs. And your smartphone can stitch all of those alternatives together. And that is becoming increasingly competitive with owning a car. That's not for everyone. Some people are still going to want to have cars and still going to need to have cars, particularly in the country. But certainly people who live in cities are finding it easier and easier at the margin to do without cars. And so I think part of the answer is also just fewer cars. But the ones that are there are going to be electric.
What is tricky about this, right, Tom, is that when we're thinking about the climate emergency and we're thinking about what we need to do when it comes to cars, you're often asking people, aren't you, to give up a thing that's really important to them. I mean, for some people, it's just getting from A to B and it's crucial. And for others, it's something that they really, really love. And it's, to me, it seems hard that in the next 9 years, a lot of those things are going to have to change for people.
Yeah, I know there are people who really, really love cars and, you know, petrol heads. They like the sound of the engine and all the rest of it. I'm not sure it's, you know, when you try an electric car, actually, even some car nerds come round to electric cars because, boy, can they accelerate. I mean, the performance is really great. And, you know, I mean, I've loved cars since I was small. I was obsessed with them. My son was really into cars for a bit as well. So we used to go to Goodwood and look at all the supercars. So I'm like really into cars. But, you know, I just find the new electric cars are just as exciting. And so, I'm hopeful that some people at least who are like really into cars just for the sake of cars, we'll continue to, you know, be able to scratch that itch just with an electric car.
Now turn right and then turn left onto the A9.
Every weekday morning, the daily diary of community events.
And we'll start with an update on the sports news. Sunday's Parish Cup game, which should have seen Stromness travelling to Rendle. That match off, because Rendell can't field a team. Now, to the What's On diary, the Master...
You set off on this journey because in 9 years' time, the government wants us all to be buying electric or hybrid vehicles. Does your experience tell you that we're ready for this in the UK?
The infrastructure is certainly not perfect. Now, there's going to be an explosion in electric cars, and it's whether that infrastructure keeps up. I mean, I had to wait once or twice for a charge, I think, and other people had to wait for me to finish charging a couple of times. The infrastructure is gonna have to keep up with it, otherwise it's going to be a lot of people very frustrated sitting around.
You talked earlier about the difficulties you had charging the car, but you were making an unusually long journey, and on the way most people you met loved their EVs, and one woman did hate hers. But after your road trip, would you recommend an electric car to a friend, at least one who needs a car to drive to work rather than the other end of the country?
Yes, I would definitely recommend getting an electric car if they can afford the initial outlay. I mean, it is expensive. It might pay for itself after a few years, but and I think if you don't have off-street parking where you can charge at home, I think it becomes a difficult decision. If you do, I think it's pretty much a no-brainer.
Sam, tell me, how did the journey end? I'm imagining it was an incredibly dramatic finish with you terrified the car wouldn't make it. Did it?
Yes. So, I mean, I'd been having this touch and go whether I was going to make it or not, but we did make it. And when I saw the sign that said, "Welcome to John O'Groats," certainly a relief. And actually, John O'Groats is a nicer place to end up than Land's End is to start. I mean, there's another signpost saying how far it is to Land's End and New York and various other places, and there was seagulls and also oyster catchers. I mean, obviously, I didn't take in any of that or the view of the Orkneys because I was only looking for the electric charger, which I found, and it worked.
Connect, set up communication with car.
Sam, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Sam Wollaston. Read all about his grand electric tour at theguardian.com, where you can also find an extract from Tom's book called The Lost History of the Electric Car and what it tells us about the future of transport. His book, A Brief History of Motion, From the Wheel to the Car to What Comes Next, is available to buy now. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be making more episodes about the climate emergency in the run-up to the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow in November. In the meantime, head to The Guardian's environment section on the website, where our brilliant team of reporters are covering all aspects of this crisis and meeting the people who are working to tackle it. This week, Damien Carrington has reported on the devastating impact of air pollution in cities around the world, and The Guardian Science Weekly podcast looks into whether we can really solve the climate crisis by planting trees. Find it all at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Joshua Kelly. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.